Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time, the only hour that ever was or ever will be, for this is the hour during which you will decide your future, and thus our collective futures. Today, folks, oh, you're not going to believe this, or maybe you will, I don't know. I was talking on the telephone with somebody, and Annie was on the extension phone downstairs, when all of a sudden, my body began to vibrate, my ear hurt terribly, I heard the greatest boom I've ever heard in my entire life, folks. I saw fire jumping from wall to wall and racing up the stairs and up and down my arms. We were struck by lightning. The phone immediately went dead, and Annie came running up the stairs, holding her head and screaming that she'd been struck by lightning, and she was in a full panic. Well, I grabbed her and shook her real hard to bring her back to reality and hugged her and let her know that she was okay. If she'd really been struck by lightning, she'd be dead probably, smoke pouring out of her ears. Her ear really hurt, and so did mine, and my ear's still ringing. So God was trying to tell me something. I don't know exactly what it is, but He was really emphatic that I get the message. And since nobody was hurt, I'm a little baffled as to what the message is, if there is any at all. What are the odds of getting struck by lightning? It's just absolutely incredible. Three phones destroyed, and our main computer is fried to a crisp. We don't know if the disk has been damaged or not, but it's okay if it is, because everything is backed up on tape. But the loss of that computer is a great loss, ladies and gentlemen. We saved for years to get it. It cost an awful lot of money. I don't want you to send donations, but if you can see your way clear and you've been wanting to buy something from us for a while, please do it now, as we have to get another computer real quick and get back up online. And we were trying to hold a sale to get money so that we could make this convention a really fantastic, great one, which we will do, come hook or crook. But we need your help. If we have anything that you would like to have, please purchase it now. And if you've been holding off to join the intelligence service, but you would like to join, do it now. I need your help, folks. Computer chips can be destroyed just by a little static electricity. And this was the full force of Mother Nature in all her glory. We had surge protectors on everything. But folks, when a lightning bolt jumps out of the wall and jumps into the computer through a floppy disk drive, surge protectors don't do much good. And if it hadn't been for the surge protectors on the telephones, Annie and I probably would both be deaf right now. So thank God we had those. Remember, the convention's coming up August 1st through the 5th. It's an important convention. And it's going to be 5 days of intensive learning. If you'd like to come, it's $100 for CAGI members, $150 CAGI are, let me say that again, it's $100 for CAGI members are intelligence service members, $150 for intelligence service members who have family membership, and $250 for anybody else for all 5 days and all the materials and everything. It does not include lodging, transportation, or meals. So make sure you get your registration fee in as quickly as possible if you'd like to come, because we can only take so many people, and after that we have to close it off. So if you're procrastinating, please don't. And it looks like we're going to get the complement of people probably within a 2 week period, the way the mail is coming in. If you'd like to join the intelligence service, it's $100 for a single membership, $150 for a family membership. Just send your fee in. We'll send you the oath. As soon as we get that oath back, we'll send you your membership package and all the goodies, and you will be a member. Might bring it to your attention also, folks, that we're going to be making some deals and doing some calculations to bring food storage for intelligence service and CAGI members down to prices that will drive every other vendor of food stored in nitrogen-packed cans right probably up the wall or out of business, one of the two. Not that we want to hurt anybody, it's just that we want to help our people as much as we can. If you think we gave you low prices before, if you're a CAGI member or an intelligence service member, very soon you're going to see some prices that are going to make your head spin. We weren't able to do it before, but we're making headway on it now, and we're going to be able to bring those prices even way down, much further than the rock bottom that they were previously, which is way under any price that you can get from any other food storage vendor. I don't care who they are. It's absolutely impossible to get it. Stay tuned, folks. We're going to continue with our series on mind control tonight, episode number 6. Thank you. Nazi doctors who experimented on the inmates of prison camps during World War II. Ladies and gentlemen, two were tried for murder at the Nuremberg Tribunal. The accused were educated, trained physicians. They did not kill in anger or in malice. At least that's the impression we get from our research. They were creating a science of death. Some of the experiments were carried out on prisoners with the aim of preserving the lives of Nazi soldiers and pilots. But nevertheless, the experiments were inhumane. It was not right. Ironically, in 1933, the Nazis passed a law for the protection of animals. Does that ring any bells, ladies and gentlemen? Are you listening carefully to this series? Where every night I made numerous connections between the past and the present. The law cited the prevention of cruelty and indifference to animals as one of the highest moral values of a people. Animal experimentation, folks, was unthinkable, but human experimentations were acceptable. The victims of the crime of these doctors numbered literally into the thousands. Now, in 1953, while the Central Intelligence Agency was still conducting mind control and behavior modification on unwitting humans in this country, the United States signed the Nuremberg Code, a code born out of the ashes of war and human suffering. The document, folks, was a solemn promise never to tolerate such human atrocities again. The code maintains three fundamental principles. One, the subjects of any experimentation must be volunteers who thoroughly understand the purpose and the dangers of the experiments. They must be free to give consent, and the consent must be without pressure, and they must be free to quit the experiments at any time. Two, the experiments must be likely to yield knowledge which is valuable to everyone. The knowledge must be such that it could not be gained in any other way. And three, the experiments must be conducted by only the most competent doctors, and they must exercise extreme care. If you've been listening, so much for that. The Nazi aviation experiments met none of these conditions. Most inmates at the prison camps knew that the experiments in the pressure chamber were fatal. From the very beginning, control of the experiments was largely in the hands of the SS, which was later judged to be a criminal organization by the Nuremberg Tribunal. Despite our lessons from Nuremberg and the Nazi camps, the Central Intelligence Agency, the United States Navy, and the United States Army Chemical Corps targeted specific groups of people for experimentation who were not able to resist. Prisoners, mental patients, foreigners, ethnic minorities, sex deviants, the terminally ill, children, and United States military personnel and prisoners of war, and veterans. Veterans, ladies and gentlemen. They violated the Nuremberg Code for conducting and subsidizing experiments on unwitting citizens. You see, the CIA began its mind control projects in 1953 that we can pinpoint. It may have been long before that. We know that while Bill Donovan was experimenting with the so-called truth drug during World War II. But 1953 was the very year that the United States signed the Nuremberg Code and pledged with the international community of nations to respect basic human rights and to prohibit experimentation on captive populations without full and free consent. Dr. Cameron, a Central Intelligence Agency operative, was one of the worst offenders against the code. Yet, folks, he was a member of the Nuremberg Tribunal with full knowledge of its testimony. Talk about hypocrisy. Talk about lies. Well, if you've been listening to the hour of the time since its inception. You know that these people who run things are perpetual liars, deceivers, and manipulators. And they're never going to stop. That's why there's never going to be any world living in harmony in the great brotherhood of man. You blithering idiots. Fraternitas Rex Mundi, my butt. In 1973, a three-judge court in Michigan ruled, and I quote, experimental psychosurgery, which is irreversible and intrusive, often leads to the blunting of emotions, the deadening of memory, the reduction of effect, and limits the ability to generate new ideas. Its potential for injury to the creativity of the individual is great and can infringe on the right of the individual to be free from interference with his mental process. The state's interest in performing psychosurgery and the legal ability of the involuntarily detained mental patient to give consent must bow to the First Amendment, which protects the generation and free flow of ideas from unwarranted interference with one's mental processes. And, citing the Nuremberg Code, the court found that the very nature of the subject's incarceration diminishes the capacity to consent to psychosurgery, end quote. In 1973, folks, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts enacted regulations which would require informed written consent from voluntary patients before electroshock treatment could be performed. Senator Sam Ervin's committee lashed out bitterly at the mind control and behavior modification experiments and ordered them discontinued, but they were not. His orders, the Congress's orders, were ignored, as they frequently are. But the New England Journal of Medicine states that the consent provisions are, quote, no more than an elaborate ritual, end quote. They called it, quote, a device that when the subject is uneducated and uncomprehending, confers no more than a semblance of propriety on human experimentation, end quote. The Nuremberg Tribunal brought to light that some of the most respected figures in the medical profession were involved in the vast crime network of the SS. Only 23 persons were charged with criminal activity in this area, despite the fact that hundreds of medical personnel were involved. The defendants, folks, were charged with crimes against humanity. They were found guilty of planning and executing experiments on humans without their consent in a cruel and brutal manner, which involved severe torture, deliberate murder, and with the full knowledge of the gravity of their deeds. They understood completely what they were doing. Only 7 of the defendants were sentenced to death and hanged. Others received life sentences. 5 who were involved in the experiments were not tried. Ernest Graywitz committed suicide. Karl Klauberg was tried in the Soviet Union. Joseph Mengele escaped to South America and was later captured by Israeli agents. Horst Schumann disappeared, and Sigmund Rascher was executed by Himmler. There were 200 German medical doctors conducting these medical experiments. Most of these doctors were friends of the United States before the war, and despite their inhuman experiments, the United States, ladies and gentlemen, attempted to rebuild a relationship with them after the war. That's right. The knowledge the Germans had accumulated at the expense of human life and suffering was considered a booty of war by the Americans and the Russians. The Americans tracked down Dr. Strugholt, the aviation doctor who was in charge of the Dachau experiments. With full knowledge that the experiments were conducted on captive humans, the United States recruited the doctors to work for them, and most of the experiments were repeated utilizing volunteer American service personnel. At least that's what the record says. When these personnel have been contacted, the ones that can be contacted, they claimed that they were coerced by their commanding officers to volunteer. Eisenhower, folks. Dwight D. Eisenhower gave his personal approval to exploit the work and research of the Nazis in the camps. Now, within a week of Eisenhower's order, many of these notorious doctors were working for the United States Army at Heidelberg. Army teams scoured Europe for scientific experimental apparatus such as pressure chambers, compressors, G-force machines, giant centrifuges, and electron microscopes. These doctors were wined and dined by the United States Army, while most of Germany's post-war citizens virtually starved. The German doctors were brought to the United States and went to work for Project Paperclip. All these doctors had been insulated against war crime charges. The Nuremberg prosecutors were shocked that United States authorities were using the German doctors despite their criminal past. And folks, the doctors weren't the only ones they brought over. They brought over many of the officers of the Gestapo. They brought over many of the scientists who developed the V2 rocket and other secret weapons for Nazi Germany, and quite a few others. Alan Welch Dulles was later to absorb the entire intelligence network of the Third Reich into the Central Intelligence Agency, and presto magico, we had an instant worldwide network of spies, all German. Under the leadership of Strughold, 34 scientists accepted contracts from Project Paperclip and were moved to Randolph Air Force Base at San Antonio, Texas. The authorization to hire these Nazi scientists came directly from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The top military brass stated that they wished to exploit these rare minds. Project Paperclip, folks, ironically, would use Nazi doctors to develop methods of interrogating German prisoners of war. So much for so much for the cohesion of the race. So much for the bloodline of the Aryans. As hostilities began to build after the war between the Americans and the Russians, the U.S. imported as many as 1,000 former Nazi scientists. And don't get me wrong, folks, I got nothing against Aryans. I'm Aryan myself. Aryan, English, Anglo, whatever you want to call it, part American Indian. I just don't like racism in any form. I don't like racist Jews, racist blacks, racist whites, racist Orientals, racist American Indians. I just don't like them, period. Whenever I get a chance, I let them know that. In 1969, Americans landed on the moon, or at least that's what they say. There are some who seriously dispute that, and in later programs we might explore that possibility. However, I don't know. Neither do you. All we know is what we've been told and what we were shown on television, and we're not even sure if what we were shown on television really came from the moon, so we have to take their word for it. Just like we have to take their word for the photographs they show us that show anomalous material on the moon and Mars. You see, we can't go up there and check, so we're sort of at the mercy on this stuff. Two groups of scientists in the control center shared the credit. The rocket team from Peenemünde, Germany, under the leadership of Wernher von Braun. These men had perfected the V-2s, which were built in the Nordhausen caves, where 20,000 slave laborers from prison camp Dora had worked. Many of them worked to death. The second group were the space doctors led by 71-year-old Dr. Herbertus Strughold, whose work was pioneered in experimental block number 5 of the Dachau concentration camp and with the torture and death of hundreds of inmates. The torture chambers that were used to slowly kill the prisoners of the Nazis were the test beds for the apparatus that protected Neil Armstrong from harm, from lack of oxygen and pressure when he walked on the moon. How about that? Now that's something the United States government doesn't like to talk about, ladies and gentlemen. But as usual, you get the truth on the hour of the time. Now, not too long ago, we played for you on this program a recruiting tape of what's known as the 1st Earth Battalion. Now, it's not a real battalion formed under arms with armor and tanks and everything like that. It is a mental concept of the new officer corps. And this tape was made a long time ago. This has been in the works for many years. Now, if you've studied any of the mysteries or the occult sciences, you know that there is a particular occult meaning attached to the Greek letter of the alphabet, Delta. I'm going to shock the living hell out of some of you little Greitz groupies. And you're going to be sending for one of our bumper stickers, Grits for Breakfast in 96. Believe me, if you don't find a place to hide. When the you-know-what hits the fan, I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. Parapsychologists, folks, have always been unlikely to gain scientific respectability through their experimental successes. In fact, they have a tough time of it. And their successes have been few and quite open to controversy and attack. Marcello Truzzi said this, and I quote, "There are three ways parapsychology might move into the mainstream. A solid, repeatable experimental demonstration is one way, but no one has come up with such an experiment," end quote. Another route would be a revolutionary new theory in one of the basic mainstream sciences like physics or physiology. A theory that indicates PSI must exist. For example, parapsychology experiments in precognition. That is, experiments with a subject correctly identifies a target before it is selected, contradict current physical theories. You see, it is perfectly conceivable that a new theory might allow or even demand precognitive, although no such theory looms on the horizon. Precognition is largely thought to be quackery. Truzzi says, quote, "The third route to respectability is in vogue, applied psi, or PSI," end quote. Parapsychologists, folks, hope to get de facto recognition from the scientific community by moving out of the laboratories and into industry and government, demonstrating that psi can solve problems. California think tanks that used to invite gurus or hold seminars on LSD and creativity now send applied psi newsletters to industry, police forces, and government agencies. Applied psi claim the advocates solves problems, even if no one quite understands how. In 1979, the Army had a problem. 90% of the soldiers who operate and maintain the Army's 7,000 nuclear weapons in Europe flunked basic tests of their military skills that year. This is an appalling statistic, folks. Absolutely appalling. But it should come as no surprise. For years, the all-volunteer Army had been failing. The Army of 1979 was an army of misfits, uneducated, ill-trained, and largely illiterate. It was an army that, according to its own secret estimates, would not be taken seriously by our allies, much less our adversaries. But 2 years later, The Army still had problems. 7 of its 10 United States-based combat divisions were rated, and I quote, not ready for combat, end quote, due to personnel problems. The question facing the modern United States Army, experts had concluded at the Pentagon, was not whether its soldiers were unfit, but what to do about it. You see, a growing number of Army futurists, that's right, folks, futurists, advocated a really unique solution to the Army's dilemma, a miracle cure, the First Earth Battalion. The hour, the time, ladies and gentlemen, sponsored by Swiss America Trading. Let's see if we've got somebody here from Swiss America Trading on the line. Is that you, Gene?
Sure is. Crap.
Well, I see the little pussy is out again tonight. He's not meowing, but he's still a little pussy. Ladies and gentlemen, for what's coming here in the near future, you're going to need the services of Swiss America Trading. And many other people, as a matter of fact. You need to start getting ready now. You should send to Surplus and Stuff for your catalog. You should be talking to Swiss America Trading or someone else who deals in the precious metals. Don't get caught up in land because of the New World Order. Ownership of land will not be allowed. Remember, this will be a totalitarian socialist state. You will be renting your land from the state. It will not be yours. And they may not want you living where you're living. They may want to move you somewhere and make you work at some other job, in some other area, some other city or state, whatever. And who knows? If you have a little teeny tiny brain, like the little pussy that just called a while ago, they may have you digging a deep hole in the middle of the desert for the rest of your life. You know, their estimation of the abilities of a lot of us may put us in places and situations doing things that we would never dream of. That we could not foresee or even conceive of ourselves in such a position as that little pussy digging that deep hole in the middle of the desert, waiting for his mommy to come and save him and change his little diapers. Now, for those of you who are smarter than that, look at your loved ones. If you can't tell them that you've made all the preparations necessary to make sure that they don't suffer, in the near future, if you can't do that, folks, then you must call Swiss America Trading or someone right now. If you get real work from the hour of the time, I hope that you will deal with the people who sponsored this program. But if you can't, for any reason, at least deal with somebody. We care about you. We wouldn't waste our time doing such an unpopular thing as telling you the truth on the hour of the time if we didn't. Don't forget that, folks. Call now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did. The year, ladies and gentlemen, is 1991. Fierce artillery duels mar the truce between Israel and the three-year-old Lebanese unity government. Soviet and American warships maneuver warily 50 miles off the coast. The United Nations Security Council votes to put a 3,000-man peacekeeping force between the rivals, but the Central Intelligence Agency predicts war before the force arrives. The president must act. He must deploy the warrior monks of the 1st Earth Battalion. From the 1st Earth Station in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the first 20 warrior monks. Where have you heard that term before, folks? If you've attended any of the Bobo Grit seminars, you've heard him refer to himself repeatedly as a warrior monk. Because he is. He certainly is. He's a priest of the mystery schools, a 32nd degree Freemason of the Scottish Rite, and who knows what else. The first 20 warrior monks wade through a crowd of reporters to a waiting transport. Half are civilians, half military, half men, half women. The youngest is 14, and the oldest will celebrate his 75th birthday on the plane. They are one age, and that is new. All folks are experienced parachutists and possess superior intelligence and the ability to make rational decisions under life and death pressure. During the 12-hour trip, most place their brains in delta wave states to conserve energy. A few test their ESP communication channels. Others listen to rock music on standard GI cassette recorders. The warrior monks carry the best equipment modern technology can produce. Lightweight laser assault rifles, hallucinogen mortars, amphetamines and night vision foods, acupuncture kits, dowsing rods for locating hidden tunnels and mines. They're prepared to fight, but they know the force of arms is the weakest power at their disposal. The strongest is the force of love. You think this is a joke? Folks, this is no joke. That's how you all got trapped by the Trojan horse. He exudes love. He tells you whatever you want to hear. If you're Christian identity and he's talking to you, then he's a Christian identity. If he's a Nazi, if you're a Nazi, he's a Nazi. If you're a New Ager, like when he gave his talk in Sedona, Arizona,
He told the crowd there that he had tried all the different religions and he just hadn't found one that he could commit to. He was still looking. And all the while, folks, he's been a staunch church-going member with temple credentials of the Mormon Church. Now, I'm not saying Mormons are bad. I'm not even saying the Mormon Church is bad. But I'm saying anyone who lies to you is bad. And this man has lied over and over and over again. Each of these soldiers of the 1st Earth Battalion are sworn to uphold the credo of high commandos and guerrilla gurus. And they have these various oaths of initiation that they take. Listen to some of their quotes. I have the capacity and therefore the duty to contribute to the development of myself, my associates, and our planet simultaneously now. Here's another one. I take personal responsibility for generating evolutionary conspiracies as a regular part of my work. And here's yet another. I will select and create conspiratorial mechanisms that are not costly in time or resources because I am aware of the many free channels available to me, such as radio, television, and word of mouth. Sound familiar? And here's another one. I will organize a self-supporting high commando group that will create and perform evolutionary breakthrough actions on behalf of people and planet. One people, one planet. And here's another one. I will then pass this concept on to others who are capable of generating further self-organizing commando teams. And still yet another. I will await the time when my group can connect naturally with others at higher and higher levels of awareness and performance. The National Guard. The Credo and the 1st Earth Battalion itself are the brainchild of Lieutenant Colonel Jim Channon, United States Army. In 1979, Channon was assigned to investigate the human potential movement for Task Force Delta. Did you hear what I said, ladies and gentlemen? For Task Force Delta. It's an army think tank of officers, futurists, and psychologists formed to study the potential of new technologies to solve the army's then critical personnel problems. Channon visited more than 130 California groups ranging from Urantia book reading to Taekwondo, Karate, and EST, which is the Earhart seminar training. California, says Channon, is 10 years ahead of the rest of the country in awareness thanks to the human potential movement. The Army needs to get involved. If we can't offer a policy of hope by the 1990s, we'll be booed out of the country. Channon's solution was the 1st Earth Battalion, a conceptual model of the Army of the next decade. Earth and battalion blended perfectly, says Channon, a union of the natural and action philosophies. The warrior monk. The 1st Earth Battalion's charter initiation was conducted at the second quarterly meeting of Task Force Delta. The group sat around a table at the Army War College Officers Club at Fort Leavenworth with a candle and a dollar bill at the center. Channon did an acupuncture technique to symbolize their bond to the earth and commitment to help one another realize their goal of a New Age Army. A colonel did a karate form. The group chanted a mantra, a word or sound chanted to reach a higher state of consciousness, in this case a long E for earth. At first they all giggled. They thought it was kind of funny. But Channon explained the significance of the great seal on the dollar bill and the words, "In God we trust." God is light, he said, truth, love, and evolution. E pluribus unum describes not $1 out of many, but the unity of the races. Warriors of the spirit, says Channon, can see many values captured in the most widely communicated piece of printed material in history, the $1 bill. The pyramid is capped by the spirit eye, indicating the order of the ages. It is America's role to lead the world to paradise. This is nothing you haven't heard if you've listened to the Mystery Babylon series. Barbara Marks Hubbard a Delta psychologist, suggested that the 1st Earth Battalion could bombard the Soviets with psychic love rather than hate and suspicion. Task Force Delta bought the idea, and the 1st Earth Battalion was born. You see, it's a philosophy, ladies and gentlemen, that by changing the concept of the goal of the soldier, rather than looking and training toward war, they look and train toward the dissolution of nation states, national boundaries, and religions, and the bringing together of the world into a one world government, the New World Order. Don't think so? Well, you just keep watching, folks. Just keep watching. You'll find out that this is all 100% true. And if you listen the night we played the training tape of the 1st Earth Battalion concept, narrated by an Army colonel in full uniform, then you heard it all anyway. The 1st Earth Battalion intrigued some members of the Army's higher command, but the question of whether or not the battalion is, quote, official, end quote, is open to interpretation. Shannon himself claims he doesn't know and says, I'm not sure the question is important. Lieutenant Colonel John Alexander, a friend of Channon, calls the official status of 1st Earth, quote, a gray area, a question of who owns an idea, end quote. Lieutenant Colonel Beckwith is the one who pleaded with the White House to name the new anti-terrorist force of the Special Operations Division of the Department of Defense, Delta. He's one of these new warrior monks also. He now runs Soldier of Fortune magazine. I wonder why. Could it be that it's important to find out who in this country have the skills and leadership to muster and train patriots and take them out on the battlefield to fight against this coming totalitarian socialist New World Order? Could it be important for people like Lieutenant Colonel James Bobo Gritz and Lieutenant Colonel Beckwith to act as the Trojan horse in the guise of patriotism, tell you whatever you want to hear and collect your names and addresses so that it's a done deal? Could it be? I wonder. I wonder, folks. Army public affairs statements about the current official status of the 1st Earth Battalion tend to ambiguity. Quote, we really don't know much about it, end quote. Notice there's no denial. In fact, there is verification of its existence, but they say, quote, we really don't know much about it, end quote. According to the Deputy Director of Task Force Delta, who was Tom Kelly at the time that this was done, he said, quote, some people think 1st Earth is a great idea, and some people think it's terrible. It's hard to get a consensus, end quote. I can imagine, with the old hardcore generals sitting around the table talking about loving the Soviets. I can imagine what they said. But Channon, nevertheless, organized and incorporated the 1st Earth Battalion Foundation in Santa Fe, New Mexico, one of the New Age centers, on a wholly private, non-profit basis, but hopes for government funding, quote, when enough people have written their congressman, end quote. A dozen candidates and 81 masters have already been selected for the New World Academy student body and faculty. Plans exist for a, quote, 1st Earth Station, end quote, command post, and, quote, New World City, end quote. Officially, however, the 1st Earth Battalion is something more than an idea. Both West Point and the Command and Staff College include the 1st Earth Battalion in their human relations curricula using a 20-minute videotape prepared by West Point, which I played on the air, along with the continuation in the training film. You see, I told you folks that for years, all of the military academies of the officer corps of all four of the military services have been teaching one world government as the only solution to war. I know that many of you think that our officers wouldn't do that to us, that they would be violating their oath to the Constitution. But if they have bought in to the erroneous and criminal interpretation of Article 6 of the Constitution, then they can rationalize to themselves that they are fulfilling their oath. Channon claims more than 800 officers are in the network that distribute First Earth materials through the Army chain of command. The Army has loaned Channon, who dubs himself a Hack Merlin, to a dozen other government agencies, including the Los Angeles and Seattle Police Departments, to explain First Earth concepts, and Channon has received official permission to speak in uniform on television and national radio featurettes. Until 1980, Channon was assigned to Fort Lewis near Seattle, where he worked with the High Technology Test Bed, a unit designated to test new equipment and ideas, including, folks, including some developed by Task Force Delta. He is presently assigned to the staff of the Army War College. Remember, Wrights attended the War College. He also claimed he worked on the staff of the National Security Council. Now, all of those people are Council on Foreign Relations and trilateralist people. They're all moving toward world government. They would not have an officer on their staff if he were not 100% completely in concert with their views and with their goals. And if you've ever been in the military or you've ever worked near people of such high rank and position, you know that that statement is 100% true. Channon believes eventually First Earth will be an operational battalion as pressures to counter terrorism and improve the manpower in the Army grow. That hope may not be unrealistic, considering the influence of some battalion enthusiasts. Four-star General Robert Shoemaker, the Army's Deputy Chief of Staff for Personnel, calls Channon, quote, the Army's leading futurist, end quote, and sees the 1st Earth Battalion and the Warrior Monk as a model for the future. Task Force Delta is definitely an official organization. Members communicate via the Army computer network, DeltaNet. DeltaNet, the official designator of the United States Army Delta Force Computer Conference and Electronic Mail Network, has over 1,000 members who call themselves, quote, the tribe, end quote. Naturally, folks, the tribe does not command universal acclaim even within the Army. The lack of a consensus is a personal matter to Channon, who's been accused by colleagues of spending too much time in California. Channon comes from a military family. His father graduated from West Point. Channon got an appointment but flunked the English exam before admission. He majored in art and ROTC, Reserve Officer Training, at the University of Kentucky. After a tour in Germany, Channon returned to the United States, married, and bought a home, and then went to Vietnam. 5 months later, he was the only platoon leader in the battalion left alive. Quote, I realized how precious life is after I was almost killed 3 times on the same day. Basically, I woke up, end quote. In Vietnam, he put his art training to work, devising a graphics map grid for pig castrators and wood carriers who regularly crossed the border and pinpointed enemy strong points. After his combat tour, Channon returned for graduate work at the University of Kentucky. There, his paintings of the war won the Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS, quote, Green Commode Award, end quote, because there was no blood. Today, his paintings hang in 5 museums. Channon's drawings illustrate the 1st Earth Battalion's, quote, Soft Tactics Manual, end quote. Shocking, isn't it? There's much, much more, ladies and gentlemen. You think there's no such thing as mind control in America? You're 100% wrong, for there is. Continue listening to the Hour of the Time. You're going to find out just how extensive it is. Remember when they claimed that they were using CS gas in the Branch Davidians? Lieutenant Colonel James Bobo Gritz went from radio to station to radio station telling the world that CS gas is inhumane, that it was outlawed in Vietnam, that we were not allowed to use it or even have it. It was not issued to the troops in Vietnam. That is a lie, folks. I had CS gas on my patrol boat on the Takhan River near the DMZ. I only used it twice to my recollection, but we had it, and we did use it. And in Lieutenant Colonel James Bobo Gritz's own book, Call to Serve, there are three pages where he recounts the accidental detonation of a CS grenade in his base camp and how humorous it was. And his recounting of the tale, folks, does not divulge any inhuman effects or disastrous, terrible repercussions of the accidental detonation of a CS gas grenade. And more and more and more. I could go on for hours, but time is up. Good night, sleep well, and God bless you all. Tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you think I made all this up, was taken verbatim from a book entitled Mind Wars, the true story of secret government research into the military potential of psychic weapons, written by Ron McRae. Kitty, 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 kitty